The Leslie Marshall Show, the only true democracy in talk radio, of, for, and by you, the people. Live nationwide and streaming live at LeslieMarshallShow.com. Call in with your thoughts at 888-6-LESLIE.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Leslie Marshall Show. We've got a millennial takeover today. My name is Maggie Thompson with Generation Progress, and we wanted to spend this hour today talking about everyone's favorite cabinet secretary, Betsy DeVos from the Department of Education. Obviously, my guests here in the studio are fans, so there have been a lot of fireworks with what Betsy DeVos's Department of Education has been doing to student protections this week. So we wanted to bring some guests in studio to tell us firsthand what's going on and why this sort of complicated federal regulatory process is so important for students. So we have two guests in studio here first, good friend and fellow collaborator on all things fighting student debt, Tariq Habash, the policy associate at the Century Foundation. Welcome to the studio, Tariq.
Thanks so much for having me, Maggie.
And then we have our own Charlotte Hancock. She works with us here at Generation Progress, where she's the program director for Higher Ed Not Debt, our student debt campaign. Thanks for being in the studio, Charlotte.
Thanks for having me again, Maggie. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So we wanted to talk about first this particular protection for students called borrower defense. Now, this gets a little bit complicated, but I know for folks that have listened to us before, you know we've talked a lot about predatory for-profit colleges, how they put people into debt that's not sustainable and often for degrees that just aren't worth the paper that they're printed on. So there's this protection called borrower defense, which is all about getting those students forgiveness. And Tariq, can you just walk us through sort of the top lines of, like, what is this protection for students? How many students rely on it? And, like, why is it important for people that are thinking about education?
Yeah, absolutely. So to break down borrower defense, I would say that there are two really big parts of the regulation. So the idea is that if a student was ever misled by their school around trying to get them to enroll in the school, around their student debt, maybe a school overpromised employment opportunities, salaries, a number of different things. If a student really felt like they were misled or defrauded, this was an avenue that was supposed to be accessible to provide relief for those students.
So loan forgiveness.
Yeah, exactly. Loan forgiveness. The other aspect of the rule that's really, really important that was kind of defined last year by the Obama administration was that there would be protections to really stop schools in the future from defrauding and from misleading students, and allowing the department to have a little bit more information from these schools, therefore to protect students on the front end, in addition to providing that loan forgiveness on the back end.
Totally. So, and these rules came about after some of these larger for-profit colleges, these are publicly traded companies, sort of fell apart under their house of cards, their pyramid scheme. So ITC Tech, Corinthian Colleges, these schools that were raking in a lot of federal money by aggressively recruiting students, but not always giving them the education that they promised.
Yeah, exactly. So after tens of thousands of students, even hundreds of thousands of students now have been left in the lurch, and potentially thousands and thousands more students that might be eligible for this loan forgiveness, the department really took upon itself to create a clearer, more transparent process for student loan borrowers to be able to get that loan forgiveness.
And how many people have applied for forgiveness so far?
So at the moment, the numbers are looking like they're upwards of 125 to 130,000. We're also talking, we're talking about another 200 to 400 students a day potentially applying. So we just came out with a report last week, and the numbers are from back in August, and we had a total number of nearly 100,000, and just in 3 months' time, that number has added another 30,000, and it just continues to grow.
It's just unbelievable. So, I mean, and just so folks know, I mean, so this is well over 100,000 people that have applied just so far. This rule has only been in place for a year. I don't think people realize the scale of misrepresentation and sort of ripping off that happens in the for-profit college sector. So this matters to a lot of people and a growing number of people who are just learning about this role. So I wanted to kick it over to Charlotte because, you know, at Higher Ed Not Debt, you know, you felt it was really important that not just the over 100,000 people who have applied for this loan forgiveness be part of a hearing where Betsy DeVos is working to repeal these protections, but also that, you know, just us as the general public should see what's happening at a table where this negotiation is happening between the department, advocates, representatives from the veterans community, but also representatives of the industry, of the for-profit colleges that are, you know, responsible for a lot of this deception. So you went to the department for this rulemaking session. And do you want to just walk us through what happened? Because I think it's stunning, the lengths the department will go to hide what's happening.
It was sort of, I mean, it was sort of poleaxing. So the reason that we're talking about all this right now is because there is a rulemaking session happening right now that'll sort of determine what will happen to all of these students who are awaiting refunds. And unfortunately,
and just to be clear, Betsy DeVos wants to get rid of this process.
Yes. So we are fighting on behalf of student loan borrowers who have been cheated or defrauded by their schools to ensure that the refunds that they are owed actually get given to them. And so we went on Monday morning to this Department of Education hearing. These negotiations, they are public. They're open to the public. Anybody can show up to them and sign in as a member of the public, in addition to all of these regulators and advocates and for-profit representatives that are in the room. And so we thought, you know, no big deal. We will show up. We will live stream. We will make sure that everybody on the Higher Ed Not Debt Facebook page around the country, all these hundreds of thousands of students that Tarek was mentioning, actually get to see this process happen in real time. This should not be
a little bit of sunshine.
Yeah, this should not be something that is limited to people in Washington, D.C. This is something that affects people around the country, and I think that the Department of Education needs to provide access to people around the country so they know what's happening to their financial futures. Unfortunately, a representative at the table who has been hired by the Department of Education to sort of run this session as a moderator walked up to me and said, this session will not begin until you stop recording. I was asked to. I love that sound of it.
That was exactly our thought.
Yeah.
Like, so, Betsy DeVos doesn't want to see wants you to see what's happening in this room, guys.
Right. We were trying to sort of shed some light on the situation. This is people around the table who are former ITT Tech lawyers. They're lobbyists for the industry versus people who are fighting for student loan borrowers. And they want this to all be happening under the rug, behind closed doors, despite the fact that this is a public meeting and despite the fact that this impacts the financial futures of so many people around the country. And we think that's just scummy, super scummy.
Yes, so scummy. And I think that, you know, before we go to break, I think we'd also say on the second day, we sent another person to go live stream again. And Christian, from our Higher Ed Not Debt staffer, he was shut down again and was literally, he had to sit in the corner of the room with three Department of Education staffers around him just to make sure that he wasn't going to be able to live stream and get information out to the public about what was being said to the Department of Education from industry representatives around the table.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, if press is allowed in the room, I don't see what there is that people have to be afraid of. If people are afraid of going on the record to say something, maybe there's something that we should be concerned about.
Yeah, and I want to add that, you know, people are allowed to be on social media in the room. There are people live tweeting everything that's being said. I feel like if I was at the table, I would want the record to show exactly what I said and leave it up to some person on Twitter trying to fit what I'm saying in 140 or I guess 280 characters now.
And Tarek, for people that want to sort of follow along on this, what's the hashtag people should go to?
The hashtag is Defend Students.
That's right. That's
definitely
what we're trying to do.
Check it out.
So y'all, we're talking about the borrower defense rule, which is a rule that Betsy DeVos and her Department of Education are trying to get rid of. It basically says if your school breaks the law, you should be able to apply to get your loans forgiven. It's pretty simple. And despite the fact we tried multiple times this week, the Department of Education would not let us live stream this process so that you all could see it. So we'd love to take your questions. As always, it's 888-6-LESLIE. That's 888-653-6535. 7543. We're going to take a short break, but before we do that, Tarek, where can people find the Century Foundation, your work? You mentioned your report. Where can people find information about this?
Yeah, absolutely. Our website is tcf.org. It's really, really easy, three letters.org, TCF. And the report is called College Complaints Unmasked. So details where these complaints are, what schools students attended that they filed complaints against, how many complaints. You can see the data set that we just analyzed for months. So
totally, that's great. And as always, if you want to share your student debt story, if you're listening, you're like, wait a minute, I went to one of those colleges, like I need to get my loans forgiven,
yeah,
go to higheredNotDebt.org and share your story with us. We'll be right back after the break for more. All right, welcome back, everyone. This is the Leslie Marshall Show, Millennial Takeover. We're back here in studio, and before the break, I was talking with my two guests here in studio, Tara Kabash from the Century Foundation and Charlotte Hancock from Higher Ed Not Debt here at Generation Progress, about a new effort of the Betsy DeVos Department of Education to get rid of a rule that allows students to get their loans forgiven if they went to a school that broke the law and ripped them off. Seems pretty simple to us. If your school rips you off, you should be able to get your loans forgiven. But the DeVos Department of Education convened a meeting just this week where, representatives from all different sectors, including the industry, were around the table negotiating about her attempted repeal of this rule. And Charlotte was telling us just before the break about how she and one of our other staffers were kicked out because even though this is a public process, a public meeting, the DeVos Department doesn't want you to see what's going on in this meeting where the industry is trying to get rid of these regulations. So some pretty shady stuff going on from Betsy DeVos. We got a couple questions over the break, so I just wanted to quick go to the line. First up, we have Ishmael from Manassas, Virginia. Ishmael, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Of course. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. You know, I don't know. I'm sure you guys are aware that Betsy DeVos have a student loan company. And some of those students who went to the schools probably have a loan for her company. So that's a very clear conflict of interest. And I was just wondering if any of your guests' organization are seeking legal avenue to point out that conflict of interest.
Yeah, I think we've seen a clear coordinated strategy by the Betsy DeVos Department of Education. Between her connections to the student loan industry, hiring for-profit executives and lobbyists, just showing how clear the corporate interests have infiltrated the Department of Education and more broadly this entire administration.
Yeah, I would add to that it's a little bit like the fox guarding the hen house, which is something that I've seen, I think, a number of reporters use in terms of describing the officials that Betsy DeVos has hired to pay attention to who's regulating the industry that these individuals actually used to be a part of. So,
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things about this process this week is that there are multiple representatives of the for-profit college industry sitting around the table. And when we were trying to shed light on this public meeting so that people could see what they're saying to our department, our public Department of Education, I think it was Aaron Lacey, who's a lawyer with Thompson Coburn, which is a firm that represented ITT Tech, the now defunct for-profit college chain. And he actually said that live streaming could, quote, have a chilling negative effect on discussions, end quote, which I think is just really telling that it's people
Everything
that are representing
that guy just said,
regulated industry that are really the ones that are against having any sort of sunlight on this process or having a live stream. So I don't know, like, why is this so important for the hundreds of thousands of people who have applied for this loan forgiveness, but also writ large for our higher education system? I know, Tarek, if you want to talk about the broader implications here, I think it's more than just about this one rule.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, like our caller mentioned, you know, there's a conflict of interest that we're seeing. And I think the broader implications is that because we're seeing Betsy DeVos and the Department of Education now put corporate interests ahead of students and ahead of taxpayers, beyond just this rule, we know that there are real consequences for borrowers who have mounting debt that they can't repay without the degree that they were promised, without the skills and the tools that they were promised from these schools. And I think what it comes down to is that, you know, siding with corporate interests is not in the interest of everyday Americans, in the interest of students or taxpayers.
Yeah, I think we're really looking at people here who were already often living without very big social safety nets. Mm-hmm. This is for-profit colleges have a history of targeting maybe single mothers or people who are looking for more flexible schedules, mm-hmm. People who might not have the resources to know that these colleges are not looking out for their best interests. We see them target first-generation college students, people without families who can sort of help them walk through the process and go through this process together to point out red flags when these colleges are doing things that are in their own interests as opposed to in the interests of students. So when we're talking about all these students waiting for refunds, we're not just talking about, we're not talking about people who are financially stable for the most part. We're often talking about people who have lots of problems living paycheck to paycheck. They're trying to support mm-hmm. families. There may be a single mother or a single father trying to make sure that they can just sort of get through the next day. I would really like to make sure that we paint the picture of who these people are, and the fact that these people don't really have much recourse if the department doesn't work on their behalf.
Yeah, and I would even add, just going a little bit more in depth, part of the assault on these rules has been to allow these schools to continue to have a mechanism to stop students and former students from being able to seek legal action against these schools. A lot of these schools in their enrollment contracts with students, as a condition of letting a student come to school, students have to sign away their legal rights. And the rule that the Department of Education under President Obama banned those clauses as a condition of enrollment. And so mm-hmm. because of that, I think we have, even though this rule has been around since the mid-90s, we haven't actually seen anyone come forward, partially because people didn't know this was an option, but also because schools have been silencing their students for years yeah. without really even the Department of Education itself knowing how pervasive these problems have
yeah.
been.
And I think that's so important, because a lot of times when I talk to people who aren't familiar with this, they say, that can't be happening. Why don't they just sue? Well, because this industry prohibits that. So this mm-hmm. is a huge problem. We need to keep fighting back against what the DeVos administration is doing to our higher education system. This is the Leslie Marshall Show. I'm Maggie Thompson, and we will be right back after a break for more on higher ed. Welcome back, everyone. This is the Leslie Marshall Show. My name is Maggie Thompson with Generation Progress. This hour, we are talking about Betsy DeVos and a little bit now about the GOP tax plan and all of the things that that means for higher education and student debt. So still in studio, we have Charlotte Hancock from Higher Ed Net Debt. Hey, Charlotte.
Hi. Hello.
And we have a new guest in studio now, Sarah Garcia, who's a research associate for the post-secondary education team here at the Center for American Progress. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, I just wanted to get started first because, you know, we were talking in the last segment about student protection that Betsy DeVos is working to get rid of that basically says if your school rips you off, you should be able to apply to have your loans forgiven. So that's what's happening in the executive branch, what the Department of Education itself is doing. But also what's happening on the Hill with the GOP tax plan has huge implications for higher education and student debt. So let's switch gears a little bit, because I know people have been hearing I'm sure you've seen the news, all the different ways this tax bill is just a tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires and large corporations that are going to hurt the rest of us. But if you're someone that cares about higher education or student debt, can you just walk us through sort of what is this bill going to do?
Yeah, no, definitely. So unfortunately, this bill was super unfriendly to students and families and parents, basically anyone who's going to college. What it does is it got rid of the student loan interest deduction, which basically means that, you know, if you have student loans, you can use the deduction to lower your taxable income by as much as $2,500. It's sort of like an above the line deduction, so it can be claimed without itemizing. Yeah. Really,
I used it every year.
Yeah,
I paid off my student loans.
It's super helpful.
Write that off every year.
Yeah, and like more than like 12 million people, I think, used this deduction in 2015. So, you know, it's not just a small thing that no one utilizes. It's something that's really, really important. And not only that, but they also got rid of a tuition waiver. Reduction, which means that, so basically if you're a grad student or in school or you're a professor or an employee of the university and your kids can go to college for free, or you're going to grad school for free because you are doing research for the university or you're teaching, that will now be counted as taxable income, which is crazy. Yeah. Because so many people go to schools where tuition is very high. And, you know, instead of having $19,000 in taxable income, they'll have $67,000 in taxable income, which for so many folks means that they can no longer afford to be in a program that can really, really benefit them. So that's just absurd.
That's ridiculous. And these are just the things that are in the tax bill. And I think the other thing that it's really important for people to understand is that the tax bill is just sort of step one mm-hmm. in a two-part process, mm-hmm. right? Step one is this, it's a $1.5 trillion with a T, tax plan that the Republicans in the House are putting forward. And not only within this bill does it take away some of these really important deductions that help people afford college, but it also, on top of that, has these made permanent tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. And, you know, that down the road is going to force more cuts to the programs that help people go to school and help people afford college.
Yeah. And, you know, what's crazy is, you know, there's also $1.5 trillion in student loan debt. So, you know, it's kind of ironic that they're having all these cuts when there are so many folks out there struggling with student loan debt. And when you think about it, you know, have all these tax cuts for the wealthy, and the brunt of it, the burden is on the middle class and working class families who they claim to want to help. And they are absolutely not going to be helped by this bill at all.
Yeah. And, you know, and we know what programs they want to cut, right? Because
yeah.
Earlier this year, Charlotte, I know we did a lot of work on, you know, the president's budget, and mm-hmm. there was just a whole laundry list of things that are really important programs that the president had, this President Trump had proposed last year cutting as part of his budget. Now, that wasn't enacted, but, like, that really gives us a roadmap. You know, if this tax plan is passed, tax cuts for rich people are really expensive. They are very expensive, folks. So down the road, they're going to have to cut something. So we know there are vital programs that are going to be cut in the future.
And, you know, one of those programs could be the Pell Grant program,
yeah.
which we know has been on the chopping blocks for quite some time now. And instead of utilizing dollars to invest in this program to ensure that low-income students can go to college and have opportunity, they're basically using this money to give back to the folks that can afford to do anything, really.
Yeah. And I think they did preserve some deductions for the hyper-wealthy. I think there was something about people who own golf courses that would directly... There was a deduction that helped out people that own golf courses that would directly benefit the Trump administration. So, yeah, that there's a bunch of problems here. But, you know, we actually had a couple calls, and I did want to go to the phones really quickly. We had a caller who wanted to talk about the topic we were just talking about earlier. Basically, you know, if your school breaks the law, you should be able to get your loans forgiven, and how Betsy DeVos is working to roll back that protection. So, Andy, in Vancouver in Washington State, are you on the line?
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome to the show, Andy. So it sounds like you have direct experience with this. What's your story?
Well, basically, I went to Carithian Colleges. Mm-hmm. I have a accounting degree in two classes just across a river from one city to another. They took away half of my credits, made me retake them anyway. Long story short, lied to me about what I'd get paid, what jobs I qualified for, filed for the grievance. They took effect and processed it on February 2nd. They said mm-hmm. they have a year to go through it. And now I'm reading that there's 10 to 15,000 of these that have already been approved that she's leaving in limbo.
while she changes the laws. So my query basically follows as such. If through some grace of a higher power, this does get forgiven for me or other students, are we still on the hook for the interest that's accruing while we're in forbearance, while they figure out what they want to do?
Yeah, Andy, that's, I'm so sorry to hear your story. Unfortunately, you're not alone. I think, you know, the crazy thing is, you know, right now that would be taxable income under this House bill. And so you would be on the hook for all of that, which is insane and super unfortunate.
Yeah. And
for
I
all of the interest? Or yeah. So if they wipe out the debt, which was originally $44,000, the $19,000 of interest that got accrued onto it, I would be on the hook to pay taxes on.
Yeah, you know, I think we'd have to double check on that, Andy. I actually, you know, we can confirm this, and if you want to make sure we get your information so we can follow up with you, I actually think this is one of the things that is on the table. Originally, when this rule went into place, the idea was that when they put your loans in forbearance while they were considering your application, that you wouldn't be responsible for that interest that was accrued. But, you know, I want to double check on that because, like we've been talking about, the DeVos administration has convened this whole new rulemaking process to sort of undo what was done last year. So I think a lot of this is in limbo. So I'm sorry, I want to make sure I get you exactly the right answer. But I think one of the main issues here is that, yeah, you know, you're not alone. Like Sarah said, there's so many people who've applied for this loan forgiveness. And to your point, you know, the DeVos administration has put a number of these applications on hold. And there's actually a number of state attorneys general that have litigated, have opened lawsuits and sued the DeVos administration over that exact issue.
I went to Carithian Colleges and they were sued by the Consumer Financial Protection Agency. They lost a $4.8 billion lawsuit for predatory lending. So if they've already been found guilty of illegal deeds and I'm supposed to manage to be forgiven, and I don't understand, I could be on the hook to the interest or the debt when they've already lost in a court of law. How does that work out? How does that mean?
You ask a great question, and I think you sort of hit the nail on the head. And one of the pain points for so many people watching this whole process happen for a second time, why is this happening for a second time when people like you have already had these cases that are proven, colleges that have been proven to have committed fraud? I think why is the question that we all want the answer to from the Department of Education. Why is this happening again?
Exactly. And Andy, I think that one of the things that our commitment to you is that we will keep on working to, I mean, at the very least, get a camera and a live stream in that room so you can see what these industry representatives are saying around that table. Because I think that, you know, in everything that this administration has done, from appointing for-profit college lobbyists and former staffers as representatives to senior appointments in the department, to virtually shutting down the enforcement unit that's supposed to investigate fraud by colleges, it's really clear whose side this administration's on. So I'm so sorry that you're going through this, and you know we're going to keep on pushing and fighting. And I think that's everything from attorneys general suing this administration to us trying to push as much as we can from here in DC to make sure that, you know, people see this process and we know what they're up to. And we know that there's a lot of people making money off of this bad debt that they pushed hundreds of thousands of people into. So thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. You know, I think that one of the things that he brought up that is just really important is, you know, when it comes to the student debt crisis overall, you know, there's these different chunks of the debt. There's the bad debt from some of these predatory for-profit schools. But I also think just, you know, thinking about this Republican tax plan that's being considered, you know, the top lines of the debt, even from sort of more traditional or legitimate schools, I mean, the numbers are just huge here. And I think that's why so many student debt and higher education programs are, you know, being eyed right now as potential revenue sources for these tax cuts. I mean, Charlotte, I don't know if you can walk us through just the top lines of the student debt crisis, just to remind everybody where we're at.
Sure. Well, there's $1.4 trillion of student debt in this country, as you all know.
And trillion with a T.
Trillion with a T. That's bigger than credit card or auto loan debt. It's huge. It's impacting is impacting millions of borrowers around the country. It's stopping people from starting families, starting businesses, investing, saving for retirement, buying homes. It's this huge strain on the economy for people who could otherwise be investing in other ways in the economy. So I think that when you talk to people about this tax plan, there are people who wouldn't mind paying, you know, maybe just a hair more in taxes if they knew it was going to something good. But when you're talking to a student loan borrower and you say, on average, you are not going to get $202 back on your tax returns mm-hmm. when you file your taxes and try to get that student loan interest deduction. Instead, that $202 is going to line the pockets of some billionaire, some Wall Street hedge fund guy, or some like some owner of a
finance
big,
pro.
Yeah, well, some, exactly. Some big hotel chain owner or something along those lines.
Golf course owner still gets to keep their deduction, but you don't.
I think that's what really grinds people's gears about this. I think that's what makes people so mad. So, yeah.
No, absolutely. And that $202 is just the beginning because that's one deduction that sure. doesn't even count
yeah.
all of the
other things they're right. skimming out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're even skimming like a program that helps employers pay for their employees' tuition. And, you know, right now employers can receive up to $5,250 they can help pay for their employees' tuition using that money, and that's sort of tax-free dollars. And that's a huge incentive for employers mm-hmm. to do that. And when you think about people who are in the workforce, adult learners, people who didn't get a chance to go to college when they were younger, like these are benefits that can help get people the skills that they need so they have the opportunities that they wanted to get when they were younger. It's such an important thing.
Yeah, no, it's just unbelievable. So, I mean, I guess, Sarah, could you give us sort of a status update on the Republican tax plan? Like, where's it at now? What can people do? Where can they go for more information? I mean, obviously, this is a fight we've got on our hands.
This is going to be a big fight, so everyone get ready. So, you know, unfortunately, the bill did pass the House, so it cleared that one big hurdle, and now the Senate is considering a similar bill, and so, you know, I would recommend for everyone to call their senators, call their legislators, remind them that this is, you know, an issue that you care about. Remind them that you are a student and these dollars matter to you. They help you get the education that you need. The fight is not over. It's far from over. We just have to be vocal and be active and remind folks why this matters, because students should not have to pay any more than they already do.
Yeah. For sure. And where can people find you or more information about your work, Sarah? And same question for you, Charlotte. Where do people go?
So you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Sarah_A_Garcia. And also the Center for American Progress post-secondary education page are a lot of great resources for folks if they want to learn about student loans, the tax plan, pretty much anything under the sun about college. So.
Sure. And again, my name's Charlotte Hancock. I work with the Higher Ed Not Debt campaign. And the best place to find out what I'm working on is on Twitter or Facebook. Our Twitter handle is at Higher Ed Not Debt. And we are constantly talking about as much of this as we can be. So. Also, and in case anybody needs the Congress switchboard number, it's 202-224-3121. Call your reps. Tell them you oppose this tax plan. Tell them it's not going to be good for you as a student, as a student loan borrower, as a parent.
Not one penny.
Not
in
one penny.
Tax cuts for millionaires, billionaires, or super corporations while we're getting ripped off.
Absolutely.
That's right. So none of, you know what? Yeah, we can't let these sketchy for-profit colleges be making money off of our higher education system, and we can't let the people that have made all that money then get a tax cut on top of it. So we've got a lot of fights to be had here in D.C. So please check out Higher Ed Not Debt, the Center for American Progress's post-secondary education team, and Sarah Garcia's work. We want you in this fight with us. This is Maggie Thompson, and we're signing out for the Leslie Marshall Show. Thanks.
Thanks, y'all.
Bye.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Leslie Marshall Show, and we're going to go over to Victoria Jones at the White House. She's a White House correspondent for Talk Media News. Welcome to the show, Victoria.
Thank you very much.
So what's going on this afternoon?
Well, very interesting story. There's about 100 technology experts have heavily criticized President Trump's plan to use artificial intelligence to screen people seeking entry to the United States. this is extreme vetting. They say it's neither appropriate nor feasible. Mm-hmm. And they've written to Homeland Security. They say they're going to use data mining to vet immigrants and visa applications using data from the internet and social media platforms. What they say is, simply put, no computational methods can provide reliable or objective assessments of the traits that ICE seeks to measure. In all likelihood, the proposed system would be inaccurate and biased, and they urge them to reconsider the program. They also have launched an online petition urging IBM to state that it will not develop technology to help the Trump administration carry out its extreme vetting.
Wow, that is an interesting take on activism. Just don't let the companies develop the tools. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I know that it's been a big day for the Republican tax bill on the House side as well, and that's probably being talked about quite a bit. Do you have any news on what the latest is there?
Well, the tax bill passed in the House. It has actually passed now. So that is a done deal in the House. But and you know, it obviously passed the way you'd expect. Republicans were for it and Democrats were against it. So it's a big victory for Republicans. But it's not done yet, of course, because there are problems with it in the Senate. And, you know, Republicans erupted into applause. And some Democrats joined in mocking. Some were singing, na, 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 na.
Goodbye.
It was.
On the floor?
Na, 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 right. Hey, hey, goodbye. Like they did when they passed Obamacare repeal.
Because, oh, my God.
There were problems in the Senate because there were some senators. Ron Johnson's the first one to say no to the Senate bill. And there are others who have problems with that Senate bill. And at the moment, it's not clear what's going to happen to it.
Wow. And are there major differences between the Senate bill and the House bill, or are they pretty much cut from the same cloth?
They're pretty similar, but there are some differences. The Senate bill fully repeals the state and local tax deduction, and the House bill doesn't. The Senate bill delays the corporate tax cut until 2019, and the Senate bill repeals Obamacare's individual mandate. And that's one of the things that's upset some of these Republican senators. And the other thing that's upset them is that the Senate bill ends tax cuts for individuals after 2025 because it's got to comply with something called the Byrd Rule, which mm-hmm. is that it cannot increase the deficit after 10 years if it's going to pass with only 51 votes.
Wow. I mean, and it's surprising about the Obamacare. You'd think after the summer the GOP would have let that one go, but I guess they're back at it with their tax plan, trying to get rid of a piece of Obamacare.
Well, it's going to raise them some money, you see, and I think they thought, well, we could use the cash, but obviously, you know, Susan Collins has got concerns about it. She hasn't said no yet, but Ron Johnson has said no because it's going to give more support to businesses, to corporations, big corporations, than to other types of businesses. He was a small business owner before he got
right
into politics.
Got it. Interesting. Well, thank you so much. That's Victoria Jones, White House correspondent for Talk Media News. Thank you so much.